Xbox.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning that brings us to one of my favorite segments all week, and that is our book pick segment. We have two wonderful booksellers from bookstores in our region where they come and they tell us about fantastic, amazing reads for you to pick up, things that are out, things that are coming out, things that perhaps were not on your radar but maybe should be. And of course, as we do this very close to the new month of November, we start thinking about gift giving and the holidays and all of that. So this comes at a very good time. We welcome Amy Zimmerman from Chatham Bookstore in Chatham, New York. Hello, Amy. How are you?
I'm so good and happy to be here with my fellow bookseller.
It's wonderful to have you here. The bookseller is Cheryl McKeon from the Bookhouse in Albany, New York, also representing Market Block Books in Troy, New York. And it is a thrill to have you both here. Cheryl, let us begin with you.
Thank you. And you gave me a wonderful segue, gift giving.
Yay.
The book I want to talk about first publishes November 18th, so we have nothing to look at here, but I did have an online edition of it, and that is Dog Show Poems by Billy Collins. It's a 96-page hardcover of 25 poems of humor, tenderness, and sadly, pathos, alternating with fetching watercolor portraits by Pamela Stigbell. Collins is the author of 15 poetry collections and the two-time United States Poet Laureate. He dedicates Dog Show to 85 dogs, from Adele to Zeke. It's mainly whimsical, as in Dharma, which opens, the way the dog trots out the front door every morning without a hat or an umbrella, without any money or the keys to her doghouse, never fails to fill the saucer of my heart with milky admiration. The watercolor portraits are unnamed, but readers will easily see their beloved pets in each dog who gazes out from the page. This book publishes November 18th. There's not a more perfect holiday gift for any poetry or dog lover on your list.
Billy Collins is so great. Dog Show Poems by Billy Collins and from Random House. Always a terrific, beautiful, small collection. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Amy.
Yeah, so given that we're almost on the eve of Halloween here, I wanted to start out with an appropriately spooky book, but one with a lot of intellectual heft that I think can be enjoyed year-round. And this book is Uncanny Valley Girls by Zephyr Lisowski, and it's in the realm of what I would call critical memoir. These are a collection of essays that loosely map onto the author's own life as she grows up watching, relating to, and also rejecting horror films. This book thoroughly engages with the modern scary movie canon, many classics that I'm sure listeners have watched and enjoyed, but through a really original lens. Lisowski examines what these movies have to say about race, class, disability, and gender. And as a trans woman with chronic illness, she asks why she feels so drawn to films that continuously present people like her as monsters. And she does so with a great deal of humor, intelligence, and self-awareness. This book is the furthest thing from one note. It jumps compellingly from werewolves as a metaphor for transition to interrogations of how violence moves in a bloody feedback loop between our politics, our personal traumas, and our TV screens. One chapter on the author's adolescent experiences with bullying and experiencing her first horror films in the American South against the backdrop of the Iraq War really stayed with me. There are two violences here, Lisowski writes, that of the empire and that of its denizens, and they are asymmetric violences and different ones, but they are linked, the violences. They can break you and then you break someone else.
Wow. Uncanny Valley Girls by Zephyr Lisowski. Mm. Cheryl.
The Phoebe Variations by Jane Hamilton. I used to read Jane Hamilton, everything that came out, and then I kind of lost track of her. So I was thrilled to see the Phoebe Variations come into the store. I had forgotten about her wit, her droll humor, and her deep introspection that she brings to all of her novels. I loved When Madeline Was Young and Disobedience. Those were last in the 90s, I would say. But she's best known, perhaps, for The Book of Ruth and Map of the World. The Phoebe Variations is a coming-of-age story. It's told in the first person by Phoebe, and when she's telling it, she's in her 60s, which we don't sense at first, because the plot is so very evocative of high school in the 1970s and Phoebe's senior year. She navigates life with Luna, her closest friend, since they were nine, and she's a very important influence on Phoebe's life. Phoebe lives with her adoptive single mom, who for some reason, in the spring of her senior year, decides that Phoebe should meet her birth mother and her stepfamily. This is the start of a spiral that sends Phoebe to hide out with her friend Patrick, who is one of 14 children, who lives in his family home, and it's an easy place to blend in. Phoebe is a brilliant pianist. Music figures prominently in the story and eventually in the course of her life. Told with humor and a generous quantity of witty turns of phrase, the Phoebe Variations addresses the universal riddle of friendship, of families of blood and choice, and of personal transformation.
The name of the book is The Phoebe Variations by Jane Hamilton. All right, Amy.
Next up, I have a new young adult thriller. So in the book biz, and I'm sure Cheryl would back me up on this one, we hear a lot about YA titles with crossover potential, books that you would want to steal from your teenager and read for yourself. Now, I have to admit that this has not always been my experience with YA, but I think that The Scammer by Tiffany D. Jackson might be one of those elusive novels that adults can enjoy just as much as kids. It's a fantastic concept. I'm sure many of you remember the 2022 case of the alleged Sarah Lawrence cult, where a father was convicted of manipulating and abusing students after moving into his daughter's dorm. Now, in Jackson's reimagining of this controversy, the action takes place at a prestigious, historically black college. And this move really opens up the novel and allows Jackson to take it in a fascinating and thought-provoking direction. The titular scammer is a man named Devante, who moves into his sister's college suite and begins to indoctrinate her freshman roommates. He's able to endear himself to these young, intelligent black women through Afrocentric ideas and social justice values. But this clever cloaking disguises Devante's more dangerous beliefs and designs. His teachings quickly escalate, both into conspiracy theories that separate the women from reality and methods of control and abuse that isolate them from the outside world. The challenge of any work of fiction that features a cult is to justify to its readers exactly how and why the cult was effective, how followers were brainwashed, and why they stayed. And that challenge is more than met by Jackson here. The ideological and psychological terrain of the novel is super compelling, and the internal narration and overall plotting is fast-paced, making this a genuine page-turner. I would recommend this book to anyone, but specifically as a gift for the teen in your life whose love of true crime or desire for grisly tales terrifies you, because this is a thrilling read that they'll actually learn a lot from, including, please, don't let any strange adults crash in your dorm room.
The Scammer is the name of the book by Tiffany D. Jackson. All right, Cheryl.
I brought Wreck by Catherine Newman because it publishes today, and it is the sequel to a very popular book from the summer of 2024, Sandwich. Wreck takes us 2 years from that Cape Cod vacation of Sandwich. Rocky, the classic Sandwich generation mother, wife, and daughter who holds the family together, is anxiously navigating a health scare and obsessing over a local tragedy. But her family surrounds her. She focuses, of course, on their needs and their situations. And Wreck is profound and relatable and, in some spots, very funny. Rocky's musings over the Buy Nothing Facebook posts she follows had me laughing until I cried. You might feel compelled to add these folks to your holiday card list.
It is Wreck by Catherine Newman, and pretty quick turnaround on the sequel. That's
yes.
good.
Yes.
Yeah, good for her.
It put her to work.
All right, Amy.
My next recommendation, Sisters Loved and Treasured, is a new release from Deborah Roberts, an ABC News journalist who you might know from 2020 or her hosting appearances on Good Morning America and The View. Perhaps more relevant to this project, Roberts grew up in a house of six sisters. And here she has compiled a highly giftable series of stories, essays, and conversations by, about, and between sisters. While you'll recognize a lot of the subjects, from Viola Davis to Jenna Bush Hager, you'll see a different side of these celebrities through these intimate windows into their sibling relationships. I was really struck by the vulnerability contained within these relatively short pieces, as women talk with their sisters about conflicts and insecurities, and moments of intense trauma and subsequent bonding. Sisters who have survived the deaths of parents and siblings and have nursed each other through illnesses and hardships nearly unimaginable. I was also really impressed by the wide range of experiences and relationships that this book covers, including an entire section on siblings that transcend DNA. As Roberts writes in her conclusion, no matter where we come from or what we've experienced, all sisterhoods share commonalities, from the pure adoration to the subtle rivalries to the struggles that make up what defines us as sisters. Writing this book has prompted me to reflect on my own relationships and has provided me with a fresh desire to tell, no, to show, my sisters that I love them deeply, that I need them, and that I want them in my life. And if you would like a signed copy of this book for any sisters in your life, we'd love for you to join us at the Chatham Bookstore for a conversation between Deborah Roberts and Al Roker on the evening of Saturday, November 15th. You can find more info about that very exciting event on our website, which I believe Joe will plug at the end of this segment.
I will indeed. They're married, you know.
Oh, I do know.
Al Roker and Deborah Roberts. So Deborah Roberts was at Skidmore College in Saratoga on Saturday night interviewing Malala for the new book. And it was amazing. Mm. It was really stunning. And she talked a little bit about her own book. Obviously, the event was about Malala's book, but she was terrific and she did a great, great job.
Oh, so it'd that's be a so lot of cool fun that you were there.
It was great. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah, it's actually just for a behind the scenes when we were trying to organize this with Deborah, who's very busy. It was very funny to be receiving emails trying to organize something around an interview with Malala. I was like, that's new for us at the little Chatham bookstore. Very cool.
Very cool indeed.
Congratulations.
It's a very cool book. Sisters Loved and Treasured by Deborah Roberts. Okay. Cheryl.
I have a nonfiction next, and it is Unbearable, Five Women and the Perils of Pregnancy in America by Erin Carmen. A quote from the book is, by any measure of pregnancy mortality, the U.S. comes in last among the top 10 comparably wealthy countries. Carmen is the co-author of the notorious RBG, The Life and Times of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She presents the obstacles to women's reproductive health and rights beyond the 2022 Supreme Court Dobbs decision banning abortion. She reports on five women plus herself who navigated the unequal, often racist and classist experience of pregnancy and birth, identifying caring and supportive individuals, as well as those whose policy deny autonomy over our lives. Several case studies are from Alabama, but pregnancy and birth emergencies are not limited to rural or deeply conservative locations. Carmen herself experienced a dismal experience in New York City. She includes episodes of fear of legal retribution after the Dobbs decision, which keeps doctors from treating life-threatening pregnancy complications. She covers midwifery and home birth centers, some success stories there, and they do improve outcomes. But as Carmen's reporting reveals, licensing and regulations obstruct their operations. Unbearable is a necessary but painful read, well-researched and documented, and written with a deep compassion.
Beautiful stuff. Unbearable, Five Women and the Perils of Pregnancy in America. And the author is Erin?
Erin
Carmen. Carmen. Okay, excellent. Thank you. And Amy?
Our customers really love historical fiction, so I'm very excited to have IMU by Victoria Riddell to recommend to them. And I know that this is also a favorite of our bookstore owner, Sharon. This is an intense imagining of the life of Maria Oosterwijk, an artist who lived in Amsterdam during the 1600s, the golden age of the Netherlands, a time when women were not permitted to belong to the Artists Guild. Oosterwijk was a contemporary of Rembrandt, known for her astonishingly realistic still lifes, mostly of flowers, that are imbued with a gorgeous sense of mortality and decay. This book is written from the perspective of Maria's maid, Goethe Peters, who became a celebrated artist in her own right, defying the expectations of both her gender and her class. While we know very little about their lives, Riddell, who is also a poet, has given us a lushly imagined relationship between these two women, who are as devoted to each other as they are to their art. If you loved Isola by Allegra Goodman, and who didn't, this might be your next great read. And this is another book that we're planning an event for. That's just how much we love it. And that is in the works at Nine Pin Cider here in Albany, probably around mid-December. So stay tuned. More info on that very soon, hopefully.
Excellent. It is. The author's name is Victoria?
Riddell.
Victoria Riddell. I am you. All right. Cheryl.
More nonfiction here. Susan, Linda, Nina, and Cokie. The Extraordinary Story of the Founding Mothers of NPR by Lisa Napoli. All of us are keenly alert to public broadcasting and its value in these days. And the death of Susan Stamberg at age 87 last week reminded me of this 2021 book about the four women who basically made NPR into what we cherish today. Susan Stamberg, Linda Wertheimer, Nina Totenberg, and Cokie Roberts, and can't you just hear them saying their names?
Yes, you can.
Were the icons who embraced friendship and solidarity as they practiced first-rate journalism, the opposite of much of the competitiveness of the business, which was often a dog-eat-dog world. Susan was the first woman to co-host an evening news program in 1972 when she led All Things Considered. She retired last month at age 87. Nina Totenberg is still the legal affairs correspondent for NPR and continues to cover the Supreme Court. The story of NPR's founding mothers is inspiring and heartwarming, and we might allow it to give us hope in this time.
The book is amazing. I'm glad you dusted it off, as it were, to bring it, because it's a great story. Susan, Linda, Nina, and Cokie. By the way, just a quick shout out. We ran a special a week ago, I guess last Friday, on Scott Simon did a 1 hour tribute to Susan Stamberg that we ran at 11 o'clock last Friday. And if you get a chance to listen to it through our website or NPR's website, it's really beautifully done. Mm-hmm. Just really, really gorgeous and so wonderful to hear her voice in so many different ways. Good stuff. Again, the name of the book, Susan, Linda, Nina, and Cokie. All right, Amy.
This week saw the U.S. publication of the first in a highly addictive new mystery series. The Dentist by Tim Sullivan is a police procedural set in England, like so many of our favorite mysteries, but it's unique in that the main character, Detective Sergeant George Cross, is autistic. Some of Cross's autistic traits are helpful to his work, especially his attention to detail and his work ethic, but we also see how socially isolated and occasionally painful his life can be. The plot is twisty and well executed, but the key draw here is the sensitivity and humor that Sullivan brings to his leading man. We learn about Cross's family life, his father, who is understanding and supportive, but also struggles socially himself, and his workplace colleagues, who have varying degrees of tolerance for Cross. Office politics are a major theme in this mystery. It's like the original British version of The Office in that pettiness always persists, even in the face of a bloody crime scene.
Tim Sullivan is the author. The Dentist is the novel. All right. Cheryl.
The next book is a big, heavy one, but I brought it anyhow in case you hadn't seen it yet.
Well,
Pride
it
and yeah. Pleasure, The Schuyler Sisters in an Age of Revolution by Amanda Vail. So we have family drama and American history, and it all started here. Angelica and Elizabeth Schuyler, born to wealth and privilege in the Hudson Valley during the latter half of the 18th century, were raised to make good marriages and to supervise substantial households. Instead, they became embroiled in the turmoil of America's insurrection against Great Britain and rebelled themselves against the destiny mapped out for them. Glamorous Angelica, who sought fulfillment through attachments to powerful men, eloped at 20 with a war profiteer and led a luxurious life. Eliza, whom we all know, 1 year her junior, married a penniless, illegitimate outsider, Alexander Hamilton, and devoted herself to his career. Amanda Vail's research included never published records and letters. It's full of quotes. It's absolutely mesmerizing as a big fat book, which is basically a historical biography. And she will tell us all about this at her book house event on Saturday, November 6th at 1 o'clock.
Terrific. It is pride and pleasure, the Schuyler Sisters in an Age of Revolution. It is by Amanda Vail. Okay, Amy.
I would just hate to leave here today without giving a good romance recommendation. Luckily, I just finished a brand new book from B.K. Borison called Good Spirits, and this is the perfect, fun, steamy read for all you holiday freaks out there who start putting up your Christmas trees as soon as Halloween is over. The delightful concept is that an antique store running, candy cane loving, chaotic mess of a woman named Harriet is confronted by a real-life ghost of Christmas past who has been sent to show her her memories and change the course of her future. Naturally, because this ain't your parents' Christmas carol, Harriet falls in lust with her ruggedly handsome ghost, and paranormal banter and magic-laced makeouts ensue. This book falls in a really accessible place on the romance-fantasy Venn diagram, by which I mean it's cozy and relatable, even if you're not someone who usually gravitates towards supernatural elements in your romance.
All right.
And I have an advanced reader copy, Joe. This could be yours.
Well, I probably you demure. Won't pick you up, but I'm curious as to what this looks like. So some snowflakes, good spirits, an absolute knockout. You make me hope, Harriet. You make me want. I am haunted by you.
Come on, give us a little more than that.
I'm afraid that's all I can muster. Oh, there you go. And now, is that romanticy?
I would not call this romanticy because I don't think it's dark enough. It's all really right. More cozy. But romance, there's some fantasy elements there for sure.
Okay. All right. And away you go. As far as your last book, Cheryl?
I just want to say I'm looking forward to your next reading.
Yeah. I can muster. I don't want to disparage it because I haven't read it and I won't, but you know.
Something for everyone.
Yeah, I know. That's absolutely true. As long as they're reading, as my mother would say.
Yeah. Well, we need to have some Irish before we leave, I think.
I love this book.
I know you do.
Yeah.
The Elements by John Boyne, and I will try to do it justice and just skim it. Irish novelist Boyne creates stories and characters that leap out in your memory years later. I find that when I see him on my shelf, it evokes a feeling about the people in his books. The best example is the emotional impact of The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, perhaps his best-known novel among readers. So you know if you've read any of him how this feels. The Elements is an epic novel of crime and guilt and redemption, of the perpetrators and the victims, including characters who are both perpetrator and victim. Four narratives interconnect in surprising ways. It was written as four novellas framed in elements of fire, water, air, and earth. The feat of this novel's construction is the interconnectedness and the multifaceted characters, determining when evil is somehow balanced by victimhood prompts much thought.
It is stunning, and you know I picked this up because it's The Elements, and then there were four elements, and the way they published it in England and Europe was each element was its own novella.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So when I was in England earlier this year, I picked up the first two. And then through means that I don't wish to get into here, I had to acquire the last two.
I had a friend get them to me. And, but it is, and the third one, I think you'll agree with me, Fire, is really hard to read.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
It's really hard to read.
Is that with the young soccer player? The boy?
No.
Oh,
no, this
really
is the older
read.
Woman.
Oh, okay.
And it's beautiful work. Yeah.
Yeah. Just the doctor.
Yeah.
She was the doctor.
The doctor.
Yeah, there's so many contradictions.
It's really an incredible piece of work. He is has been on our book show. If you want to hear our interview with him, you can go to WAMC.org. And you all have provided some great books and a great list. So I thank you very much. For more information, you can go to the websites of these fine bookstores. ChathamBookstore.IndieLight.org. They have events coming up with Deborah Roberts, and the other author is
Victoria Riddell.
You can find out more information by going to their website. Also, the bookhouse, bhny.com, and their event coming up is also very cool, with Amanda Vale on Pride and Pleasure. Thank you both very much.
Thank you. It was great fun.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.